Today is November 2nd, 2015. This is the October 2015 Life Coach Training Cohort, and it's one with Martha. And it sounds like the crackle's gone, Martha, so I think we're okay.
Woohoo! Hello, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so happy. It actually rained a little here in California for the first time
wow.
in 1,000 years.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah. So, and I'm ecstatic to be here with, like, our new cadets. Did you guys know you were called cadets? Yes, you are called cadets. And you are in for some happy, happy fun times. I was wondering if we could take questions on this call. Chris, do we have that capability?
Absolutely.
Technically?
Yeah.
Okay. So totally. I'll say a little
bit.
So
we have questions from people that they submitted in advance.
I know, and I'm trying to get that off the internet, and it's not – one thing about it raining here at the ranch is we don't always get things that come by
the internet. Well, I can read them for you if you want. You want to do that?
That would be amazing. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to start because it always works out backwards. So I'm going to start with the last question first just because.
Yeah, it is perverse.
Tracy Peterson – posed a question, and she says, how do you prepare for a coaching session with a new or existing client, for example, meditation, set an intention, or any other personal technique?
Oh, yes. The most important thing is that you have, that you act to a certain state of quiet. So you really, you'll find as you go through this that you don't actually have to know anything when you show up at the session. What you have to, I mean, the tools definitely help, but all the information comes from within the client. So I just got back from the Byron Katie 9-day school where you just do, if you're not familiar with her work, it is a process of dissolving any thought that causes you stress or discomfort. And it was fascinating to me because the way it's in her books, right? So I had read it. I'd learned it by reading it. And I thought of it as a very cerebral process because the way you do it is you think of a thought like, I suck, and then you start to examine it for truth or falsehood. And I actually call it the HAT technique, the hypothesis, antithesis, thesis. You present a hypothesis, you look for data to disconfirm your hypothesis, and then you change your hypothesis to fit the data. And it is very scientific. That is the essence of the scientific method. What I didn't get, because I hadn't learned it from Katie in action, was that you're actually not getting the answers to your questions from within the mind at all. The Tao Te Ching, my favorite copy of the Tao Te Ching, which is translated by Stephen Mitchell, begins, those who know don't talk, and those who talk don't know. But in Chinese, that could also be read as that within you which knows does not talk, and that within you which talks does not know. So it helps to be bright, intellectual, when you're doing the Byron Katie work. But if you give an intellectual answer, she won't stand for it. Instead, you have to get silent and wait. So, Chris, I'm going to use Chris as a guinea pig and show you how this works. So, Chris, tell me a stressful thought you had today.
I'm not going to make as much money as I wanted to by the end of the year.
Okay, so you're right. You guys do not have to know this tool yet. This will come later. But I'm going to show you how I was doing it differently than I'm now going to do it. So is it true that you're not going to make as much money as you wanted by the end of the year? That's the first question, is it true? And instead of, well, go ahead and answer that based on whatever impulse comes up. Is it true?
I can't.
And the answer can be yes.
Sure.
What?
I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure, so no.
Okay. So then the second question is, can you absolutely know that you're not going to make as much money by the end of the year as you had hoped? Now, when you get this question, instead of answering it quickly or by saying, oh, yeah, because I realized this and this and this, what I want you to do, Chris, is find the part of you that absolutely knows things. And it comes, you have to get quiet. You have to get still. And it actually comes up from within the body rather than from the head. So can you absolutely know that you won't make as much money as you wanted?
No. No.
Hey, okay, so now, did you all hear the difference in her voice between the first time, oh, I can't be sure, and then this other presence? Did it feel different to you, Chris?
Yes.
Tell us about that, please. How is it different?
As soon as you said, backwards, because I'm past that already.
And you absolutely know that it's true that you won't make as much money as you wanted this year.
It was when you said something about knowing, immediately I felt myself anchor in to the ground, to something very deep.
Yep.
Just felt wisdom with a capital W coming in.
Yeah, and it's an actual physical sensation for me. It actually, it locates itself right in the heart, but also it seems to emerge from somewhere even deeper. So where did you feel yours
like,
in the body,
felt like
Chris?
Like the womb, my stomach, like right around my belly button and there, just really
solid. Okay, the dantian. The Chinese would call that the dantian, the place where all the chi is centered, all the spiritual power. Or for those of you who aren't into spirit, all the energy. So I'm going to finish this process just because I've started with her, and I actually don't do hypotheticals. I always like to work with specifics. So once I start working with someone, Chris is just not just giving an example. I'm now coaching her flat out. And I don't like to leave that unfinished. It's like opening a wound and not closing it. So, Chris, how do you feel? How do you react? And what happens when you believe the thought, I'm not going to make as much money this year as I'd hoped?
I get nervous, edgy, panicky. My body feels tighter, like my arms are getting closer to my sides and my hands want to ball up into fists.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like this pressure comes over me, like I have to act, I have to do something. There's like a should that there's pressure.
So does this thought bring more peace or more stress with it? This, when you believe the thought, is it more free or more confined?
Much more confined.
Okay, so that's the effect of this thought, which we don't know. The peace inside her already told us that it may not be true. So who would you be, Chris? And I want you to take as much time as it requires for you to feel this come up. Who would you be without the thought, I'm not going to make as much money this year as I'd hoped?
Word flew into my awareness and the word was rich. I felt this abundance, this wealth of something come over me, and I don't even know if that's money or it doesn't matter. I just felt held in richness and wealth of abundance and flow, and just felt really safe.
Now, you guys, Chris has done a lot of her own work. When you watch someone do this and they're used to doing it, it looks too easy to be true.
I would agree.
The reason it's having such a kick so quickly is that Chris has done this a lot. And the more you do your own work, the more your stressful thoughts. And the more you dissolve your stressful thoughts, the more you realize that your thoughts are actually influencing your behavior in a way that creates what you expect and what you believe. So with this belief, she's acting in ways. How do you behave when you believe the thought, I'm not going to make as much money as I want? How do you behave toward your business and your clients?
I get kind of frantic, you know, like I want to, oh, I better write another newsletter, I better do a blog post, or I better put some offering out there, and I really, you know, I better like start emailing some of the clients I haven't heard from in a while and see if the, it, but it all feels like scattered, like I don't focus. It's just like try everything. It's almost like desperate, you know, or clingy.
So more shackles on or more shackles off?
Definitely shackles on.
Okay, so who would you be in your business without the thought, I'm not going to make as much money as I wanted?
Trusting.
Yeah. Keep digging. Katie says this is an archaeological dig. You want to get out all the artifacts you can.
Yeah.
What else do you feel, and how do you behave without the thought, I'm not going to make as much money as I wanted?
I just feel like there's a purpose to this. There's a, I'm tapping into something that's teaching me something, or there's like the wealth feels like there's a wealth of learning for me. There's a wealth of, grasshopper, that didn't work, try something else. Like there's a wisdom to this.
So it's almost like a higher part of yourself is saying, don't worry, sweetheart, this is a lesson and you're learning it.
Yeah.
Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, that's it.
Interesting. Okay, so now we turn the thought around. I'm not going to make as much money as I had hoped. Can you give me a turnaround for that? A turnaround, you guys, is the opposite of your worst fear is always the way forward. So now she's shaken that thought loose from her mind. We're going to just do a quick check to see what actually is true for her. So what's a turnaround for I'm not going to make as much money as I'd hope by the end of the year?
I'm going to make more money than I'd hope by the end of the year.
Okay, so go in. Do not let this stay at the level of mind. Drop in. Drop deep. Can you think of a way that turnaround might make more money than you thought? You don't have to think of one, but if one comes up from underneath and it's just a possibility, let's hear what it says.
I'm going to be delighted by the end of the year.
Ooh, where did that come from?
I have no freaking clue. I'm lying.
Do you feel that sense of Yoda hiding in your brain going, oh, I have a present for you?
Yeah. I just felt this deliciousness well up in me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like it doesn't matter if it's money or not, but something delightful is going to happen.
Uh-huh. And does that image bring with it more stress or more peace?
A whole boatload of more peace.
So in which state are you likely to attract more clients, energetically speaking, and emotionally when they interact with you? Fairly obvious.
Believe
it. Who wants a life coach who's panicking?
Yeah. Trusting in the delight.
Yeah, okay. So, and you guys, money is like a horse. If you love it and you don't grab at it, it wants to come be with you. So give me another turnaround for I'm not going to make as much money by the end of the year as I'd hoped. I have one. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, go ahead. One I was going to say is I'm not going to make the money I dreaded.
Ooh.
So like turning
hope.
Can you
think of a
around.
Way that might be true?
Yeah. Because I'm not going to make the money the way I've made it before that's starting to feel boring or dreadful or icky.
Yeah, if money comes, if you grasp at money out of fear, it has a weird way of slipping away from you anyway.
Yeah.
And we've all, I mean, I've coached enough examples of that where people are incredibly wealthy, but they're in this fear-based scarcity pattern, and by golly, they create scarcity. It's amazing that they even can. So you're not going to make the money you had dreaded.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see.
You
the
had
money
one.
I had hoped for is going to make me this year.
Ooh.
Could that be true? We're just playing with language here, you guys. This is just part of the process.
Money I had hoped for is going to make me. Yeah, I don't know how. Like I can't picture the evidence, but it feels right. So.
Mm-hmm. No, you guys, we don't just play and it feels right. We definitely want to do the math and get the evidence, but that comes at a different phase of coaching than the one I'm in now. You cannot create abundance out of scarcity thinking. You cannot do it.
Yeah.
And so it's like trying to make bricks without straw. There's no positive energy for you or anybody else to connect with. So the first stage of getting her more money is to free her thoughts from the pattern they're in. And what that does is it changes the brain. She's used to thinking the no money thought, most of us are, over and over and over again, which creates a very strong pathway in the brain. This process breaks it up. But what I wanted to show you is it's coming from a place that is not the mind. And all of this is from the question, what do you do to get ready for a session? You go into that part of yourself that knows. And the one thing that isn't allowed in is fear. So you get to a place where you are fearless, even if you have to, like, do a little work on yourself to get to a fearless space, even if your client is a heroin addict who's about to overdose and die, you go in there quiet inside. And that which does not speak will give you wisdom. And that which does not speak in the client will give them wisdom. You notice I don't have to know anything about Chris's life. I know a little. But I don't need to. She could be a factory worker for all I care. You know, it works no matter what because the information comes from her true self. So there's no need for me to prepare except to be receptive and to be on the side of her herself, her true north, her authentic self. And then I can gently encourage her to access what she already knows. So in this state, she's much more likely to have an idea that will bring in money. Or she's much more likely, for those of you who like the woo-woo, it's so interesting. I've seen this with coach after coach after coach. When they give up and they just start, I'm going to go on vacation. You know, I'm going to get in my truck and drive to the bayou or whatever. It's when you stop trying that the thing you want to create finally makes its way to you because you're not holding a pattern of thought that is tense and unpleasant. Who wants to come to that, right? A tense, unpleasant energy. So being that, I'm sure I've told you guys already my favorite quote from Huff is, but I'll tell you again, this little snippet of a poem that goes, "Troubled, then stay with me, for I am not." And as long as you can say that to your client, you are golden. They're going to find their North Star. You're going to love it. They're going to give you all the credit, and you will just go, I didn't actually do anything, but thank you for this money. So, Chris, how are you? Have we sewn you up enough yet? Can we move on? Because I'm not leaving you dangling.
Totally. I was laughing because as soon as you were talking about, when people give up, it's happened to me time and again. Just
tell me a story, Chris. When
walk away. Well, there's one that happened, it started about 6 months ago. I was, panicky about how the hell am I ever going to make money at this labyrinth thing.
She makes labyrinths, you guys, and they're amazing.
And
that's where her coaching took her.
who knew? And I was just like, oh, my gosh, I don't know how this is going to work. And I just was like, oh, screw it. You know, I'm not going to devote any more time to it. I don't even understand what I'm supposed to say or write or do about it. And then I got this email from a woman who owns a ranch in Arizona who said, oh, Jennifer Voss was telling me about you and that you like labyrinths and that you do this really beautiful labyrinth stuff and that you built one at Martha's Ranch. And could we talk? I was like, yes, please. So I'll shorten the story, but last 2 weeks ago, I was on her ranch in Arizona and built a labyrinth on her property, and there were 14 people there who were all coaches who helped me finish it and bless it and do a walk, and it was, I mean, I was in tears the whole time because I was so happy. It was just ridiculous joy, and I got paid to do it, too.
So that's wealth. That's the kind of wealth that comes to you when you're in touch with that which does not speak within you but knows. The money that you do get comes with joy. It comes actually with a kind of creative rapture. It's an extraordinary sensation. It's so different. And Chris, could I offer a hypothesis, and then we'll move on?
Yes.
My hypothesis is, well, I'll give you an example. I have suddenly become obsessed with drawing and painting, which I did my whole childhood, and I was going to be an artist, but when I was still in my teens, I got really bad fibromyalgia and I couldn't draw anymore. It affected my hands. And now I'm in my 50s, all of a sudden it's back, and I realized that if I had been able to draw as my primary thing, I would never have written books. I would never have become a coach. We wouldn't be here. So it's almost like I was kept away from using my skills to serve an old system that it's not my destiny. But now that I've given up trying, you know, I'm not going to go try to become an artist, a professional artist in the old pattern. It's like, okay, great. You can have all the joy and all the creative rapture back. And you could even have wealth based on it because you're never going to sell it out now. You're never going to sell out to the panic. So does this resonate with you that your money is withheld until you get to a place of rapture, and then it gets poured on you because the universe wants to reinforce your true north. It wants to tell you, yes, 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 that's the way, that's the way. Now,
totally,
how does
totally
that feel?
Resonates with me. Yep, totally resonates.
Yay! Yay! Okay. All right. So I leave you to your playing. But just notice that came from somewhere beyond the intellect.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to have any particular intellectual knowledge to coach her. You just have to be willing to wait for that which does not speak to give the answer. Don't panic. We should all get buttons that say that. All right. What's the next question, Chris?
Meg has a question, Meg Wilson. She said, what's the most challenging subject you've come across in your coaching practice? How did you overcome the challenge, and did the client believe that their coaching experience brought them peace?
I've worked with a couple of sociopaths, and that was more enlightening for me than for them. Sociopaths really don't have much of a prognosis for cure because they don't think anything is wrong with them. So barring those, the most challenging thing I've had is coaching people in rural Africa who have nada. Nothing. They have every reason to live in anguish and rage at the people who took their homelands away. They have every reason to be miserable and very, very few resources. I mean, you think you feel poor? Try rural Africa, folks. And, you know, like I remember analyzing one woman's dream, and it was just so violent and horrible that these people were coming in to kill them. And it was based on, you know, there's a lot of violence in Africa, and she was really afraid of it. And I just thought, this is rich for my blood. I don't know if I can do this. But, yeah, that woman is now in a really good job and doing very, very well. And she told me that the coaching helped a lot with that. So even in a place that is just so much more, as the South Africans would say, more hectic than here, the tools, it was like taking out my equipment and trying it in space or something. It was like, I don't know if the equipment's going to work here. But it did. It worked. The coaching tools worked. Her life got better. It continues to be better to this day, and it's been like 10 years. And things just keep getting better and better for her because she's internalized what we do. Our whole job is to work ourselves out of a job. We teach people how to be their own guides or follow their own internal compasses, and then they don't need us anymore, but a lot of them still keep hiring us because it's a fun process. It's really great to have a guide as you go through. So I'd say that is probably the most challenging thing, is dealing with people who, boy, have nothing.
Okay.
Next question.
Here's another one. Catherine Marsak said, what's the best piece of advice you can give us as we embark on our coach training journey? Can you please shine a light on the biggest potential pothole you'd like to see us avoid falling into as we go through the training? And for you personally, what's the number one thing you'd like to see us take away from the training?
Oh, it's all the same thing. It's very, very simple. Trust yourself. That's it. Trust yourself. That deep part that Chris just accessed in herself, that will never, once you learn to touch it and ask it and listen for it, it won't lead you astray. It will be the most powerful friend you've ever had in the world. Let's see, anything more to say about that? Pothole. The pothole is falling into fear. You think everything is going great, and you can feel that resonance in your body and your soul. And then the world hits you with, like in my case, the drought in California really knocked me sideways because I bought this, spent all my money on this property, and then watched it dehydrate. catastrophically, worst drought in California history. So I went back into fear, and that is not a healthy place. But it's never a problem because it's like the world is a big gymnasium, a big gym that we've all joined, and we're here to learn to trust ourselves, to trust that which within us which does not speak but knows. And it's like you put a weight down when you exercise confidence and self-trust. It's like pushing a weight into the air. When you fall back into fear, it's like the weight comes down. And a Martian coming into the room might say, "Oh, I got a solution. You keep trying to put that weight up in the air. Let's build a machine that will hold it in the air forever, and then you can leave, and the weight will stay up." But that's not why we're here. We're here for the strength that comes from lifting the weight and then dropping it again, and then lifting it again, and then dropping it again, and lifting it again, and dropping it again. And every time you fall into fear, suffering will remind you to try another path. Eventually, you may stay in fear for a while, but then fear just sucks. So after a while, you go, you know what, I'm going to use my coaching tools. I'm going to get myself back into a space that's positive. And then you do that, and you're stronger the next time. Each time you come out of fear into trust, you become stronger. And in the brain, actually, you're creating a different brain that's more, it's more benevolent. So what would I want you, what's the number one thing I would want to see you take away from training? Trust yourself, really sincerely. It is not about me. It is not about the master coaches. It is not about the system. It is not about anything but the internal guidance that is trying to speak to you all day, every day, anyway. All we do is ally ourselves with that. And I really would love you to know that it is that it is you that is making this transformation. And it will transform you if you do the training. And it will come from within you, and it has nothing to do with any of us, and it is not in any way less than any of the instructors or than I am. Your inner teacher is more powerful for you than all of us put together. So I'd really like to see you realize, oh, we're all equal here, and my guidance is more wise for me than anything else that I could access. So that's what I'd like, is just you really know that feeling of going to your own inner wisdom. Yes, yes. So I think that does it. Is there another question, Chris?
Yeah. I'm sort of going through some of the more technical ones first, figuring then we'll get into some of the ones where you might want to do some coaching. So.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so we'll do a couple more technicals, and then we'll get you diving into that coaching
stuff. Woo-ha!
So Hope has a question. She says, nice to meet you on this call. My question, can you explain the difference between a creative response, as described in one of the core values, and a reactive response? I sense there's a distinction between responding creatively and skidding straight into reactivity. Any insights you can offer about how to recognize the difference and employ one over the other would be most helpful.
Yes, anything that causes any degree of what I just called shackles on, and that means anything that is that causes suffering of any kind, is you need to immediately know that that thought is not true, and instead of reacting as a response to believing the thought, you question it. So, for example, say you're on a call and a master coach corrects you on something. You may have the thought, oh, I did it wrong. I made a mistake. And you might then connect it with thoughts like, I'm such an idiot. Why did I do that? Everybody saw me. I'm ashamed. Blah, 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 blah. And this will cause suffering, guaranteed. So when that happens, you need to be able to spot the thought that you are believing and have a creative response to it by, first of all, not believing it, and then by looking for evidence of its opposite. And this requires, more than anything else, it requires slowing down. So whenever you have a reaction that's negative, slow down or find time after the situation to go through it. Slow it down. Start to create by finding the opposites of any thoughts that bring you suffering. And you will, the interesting thing is that you will have ideas you could never have without those negative, without those painful feelings. When you start doing the coaching and you use the thoughts, like the thought money will find me instead of I will find money, could open up an entire part of your consciousness that is able to attract money that you weren't paying attention to. So, yeah, that's a creative response where you don't believe suffering and you begin to explore all the positives.
Okay, thank you.
Next.
All right, here's another one from Jennifer. Have you ever had a client where you didn't know how to help them? If so, what was the situation and how did you handle it? Have you ever fired a client, and if so, why? P.S., I'm patting my inner lizard on the head.
Yeah, I just said I'd worked with a couple of sociopaths. They basically came to get attention, and I was not – it's very difficult to spot a sociopath, so I didn't actually know that there was anything wrong. I had an uncomfortable feeling that I couldn't explain, and these folks would come and be completely normal-looking and acting, except that they were very self-pitying, and they'd go away and I would feel angry instead of loving like I usually do. And one of them finally told me she always had a – they always wanted free coaching, and I always gave it to them because I was a total sucker. And this one woman said in one session that her house had, like, burned to the ground, so we did all this work on it. And she lived in Phoenix. This is when I was seeing people in person. And so – I felt so bad for her that later I drove over to the house to, you know, bring a goodie basket and see what the damage was. And it was just standing there. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. And after that, I tried to talk to her about it, and I didn't even know what a sociopath was, right? So it didn't work very well talking to her. And ultimately, I did fire her. Oh, and she was so, oh. She was so dismayed, and she told people such mean things about me, and no one believed her. So I really learned a lot about my own fear and what was keeping me working with people that I didn't, that I, my own inner compass was saying, stay away from this person. But that's so rare. I've coached hundreds and hundreds of people, and about three of them were that challenging. The rest are just scared. And if you just, if you know the tools and you trust them, the worst that can happen is that it takes them longer. And that means if you're charging them by the hour, you get more money. So that's like your worst case scenario right there, and it's not that bad. It's just love. It's easy. It's so easy.
One of the things I would just add to that, too.
What?
Whoops, sorry. One of those things I would just add to all that, too, is we cover a lot of these questions again in the training. So just so you know that, you know, you'll hear opinions from not only Martha today, but you'll also hear from the rest of us instructors as we go through different classes. So
yeah, everyone
we'll
has
be telling you their
stories,
experience. Too. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone has a different experience, and that's cool. Okay, so.
All right, here's one. Yeah. Donna Peterson, I'm interested to know if any part of the course deals with helping people while they're grieving the loss of a loved one. Can you explain your high-level approach to helping individuals who are dealing with significant grief?
I wonder if this might be an opportunity to coach.
I think it might be.
Could we?
Of course. So, Donna, if you are on the call, Donna Peterson, just hit 5-star to raise your hand, and I'm going to be scrolling around on my screen looking for your little question mark hand. I think I see you.
Donna. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Donna.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yay. So, my dear, are you interested in this because you have lost a loved one?
I'm interested, yes, because I've lost a loved one and because I thought that might be a place that this takes me to help other people.
Exactly, because as you'll see in the training, whatever you've survived is where you can really be a out-of-the-ballpark, fantastic coach. So how recent was your loss? Was it just one person or have you lost several?
I lost my daughter at age 22 to suicide 6 years ago.
So that's the big one for you.
Yes.
All right. So do you still grieve? Is the grief still raw?
Not as raw as it was the first 3 years. And I've learned how to put it in a place so I can go on. And
right.
I go there once in a while when I feel ready.
All right. So when the sadness reappears, what I'd like you to do is think of a situation where the sadness reappeared recently.
Okay.
What was happening in that moment? Were you inside or outside? What was going on?
It was her birthday.
Mm-hmm. Recent birthday?
Yeah.
Okay, so what were you doing? Were you were thinking about her? Were you looking through her things? What's the deal?
I wanted to avoid it, you know. I wanted to have that. I wanted to just have that day that I didn't fall apart, and I didn't have to leave work. I just wanted to have a good day. But
how did that work out for you?
Yeah, it kept coming. It kept wanting to come out.
Sure. So you're at work. What's the hardest moment of that day?
Turning the calendar to that day.
So you're at. I want you to actually physically think of a moment where you're at the office. Maybe where do you work?
I work in Princeton, New Jersey.
Okay, so you're at your office in Princeton, and it's her birthday, and the thought comes up. A thought will come up as you see that date. What is the thought that arises as you notice what day it is?
I see her happy face, and I feel that she would have been so excited, you know, to celebrate. And that really hurts, so I push it away.
Okay. So how does pushing it away work for you as a strategy for living?
I don't think I can tell yet.
Okay, well, just notice the feeling as you push the thought away because it hurts. First of all, tell me where the hurt is in your body, the hurt sensation. Where does it come from in the body?
My heart, my eyes, my mind.
Yeah.
My head.
So instead of running away from it. Don't worry. I will not let you stay in this feeling, but I would like you to go into it instead of moving away from it. Just notice where it is in the body, your heart, your mind, your head. Go in instead of out. Okay. Now, does it start to flow? The pain?
My chest, yeah.
Yeah, okay, breathe deeply. And I'd like you, if you wouldn't mind, to mentally offer yourself a loving kindness sort of mantra, which is so simple. It goes, may you be well. May you be happy. May you be free from all inner and outer suffering. So the part of you that's grieving, instead of pushing it away, I write those thoughts. May you be well. May you be happy. May you be free from all inner and outer suffering. May you be well. Just repeat over and over. Just allow and calm. Allow and love. Allow and love. Allow and love. Are you able to do that?
I am.
Does anything change?
Well, it lightens. You can tell by my voice, right? It lightens.
Yeah, your whole energy has changed. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
So as you allow the pain, for one thing, it starts to dissolve immediately. But now I want to know the thought behind the pain. So as the pain comes up and flows, it's saying, what was her name, dear?
Chrissy.
So it's saying something. It's saying something like, Chrissy is gone, or Chrissy should be here, or something. I don't know what it is for you, but it's saying something. Can you tell us what that might be?
She's so horribly missed.
Sorry, sweetie, say again.
She just missed really bad.
She would miss.
I miss her really bad.
Oh, I miss her really, really bad. Okay. Yeah. So, now I'm going to ask you a very scandalous question. I miss her very badly. Is it true? And give me an honest answer, please.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Okay. Now, we're going to do what we did with Chris, which is we're going to tap you in to the part of yourself that is beyond the mind, beyond even human ways of knowing. So the next question is, can you absolutely know that it's true that you miss her? And the answer can be yes.
I think the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, just notice, say the thought is like an object you can hold in your hand. The thought, you hold it in the mind. I miss her so badly. And as you hold it, and I don't want you to drop it. I want you to treasure it. I want you to love it. I want it to be there. I want it to have every bit of attention it deserves, and it deserves a lot of attention. But as you hold the thought, I miss her so badly. Just notice, be an observer. What happens in your body?
Start to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have her.
Wow. Say more, please.
I have her in my heart.
Say more. You still have her. What an interesting thing to say. Where did that come from?
from holding this marker in my hand, that's her, and I still have the marker. she'll always be with me.
Okay, so who would you be if the thought, "I really miss her so badly," was taken out of your brain by a miracle or a neurosurgeon or something, so that literally you're not capable of thinking that? You're capable of everything else. You're capable of loving her. You're capable of feeling her presence, her spirit, her joy, everything she is. But you no longer have access to the thought, "I miss her so badly." Now just notice, you're holding the marker, you're in the office, it's her birthday, and you no longer have within your realm of possibility the thought, "I miss her so much." Who would you be then?
I'd be able to think about her without falling apart, and I'd be able to focus on some of the good things and the good memories and not push them away, which I guess is what I'm doing. I'm pushing everything away.
That's why it fights to come back, darling.
What's that?
That's why it fights to come back. You're never supposed to lose the good stuff.
Yeah, I think it was my survival method early on, and then I just kept it.
Absolutely. And how beautiful and amazing that your mind was able to create a pattern that allowed you to continue. How amazing that you were able to numb out and keep going.
Right.
But the problem with that is that the numbness now is blocking potential joy. Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, you're right. You're right.
So now it's time to turn the thought around. I miss her so bad. What's the opposite of that, do you think? Just think of an opposite to that statement.
I have her with me as much as I want to be with her in my heart.
Does that feel true?
Maybe not fully today.
Yeah, and it's actually not precisely the opposite of the original statement. So I'm going to go back and repeat the original statement. I miss her so bad. What's the opposite, the literal opposite of that thought?
I miss her so good.
Just let that, just sit with that for a minute.
What's that?
Sit with that thought for a minute. I miss her so good. Just percolate that for a bit. How does it affect your body?
Calmer. I'm definitely calmer.
Do you feel how missing someone has a sweetness to it?
Yeah.
Even in the middle of the sadness, there's a sweetness.
Yeah, I'm smiling.
Yeah, and you can be sad and joyful at the same time. It's the strangest thing. It goes against what our culture teaches. But you can love her and miss her and have it be good. If you don't mind bittersweet, and bittersweet is pretty much all of life, so it's a nice thing to know how to do. And after a while, the bitter disappears and only the sweet is left. But only if you allow the feelings to flow. And, of course, you haven't had sufficient space. You haven't had what we call a cocoon in which to fall apart yet. Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, you're right.
So I miss her so good. What another turnaround might be, I miss myself so bad.
Ooh.
Would that be true?
Yeah. Yeah.
How could that be true?
Well, I've certainly changed a lot and
shut yourself down.
I don't enjoy certain things as much as I used to.
Sure.
And I miss that.
Yeah.
You dread holidays, you dread a lot of things that used to bring so much joy to myself and to the rest of my family.
Yep. So you lost one loved one. Don't jump in after her necessarily. Well, ultimately you will jump in after her, and it'll be awesome, I promise. If you've had a near-death experience, you know I'm not lying. But I miss myself so bad. You can do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
You can let yourself come back to life.
Wow.
So how's that feeling?
It's a good feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I didn't expect all that out of my question.
Well, I just wanted, that there was something in the world, there was something in the energy or whatever you want to call it, there was something that wanted you to heal. And so when I see the question, Chris reads me the question, my thought goes to coach this person. And it's not that I don't respect and adore all of you, but there's something in me that responds almost as if it's an emergency to certain people, and other people maybe not quite as much at that particular time. So that's what I'm following, and I just want you to know it's not me. It's something else. It may even be your daughter. I don't know. But your question is eliciting comfort from the universe. It wants to comfort you. Now, you can tell me where I'm wrong on that. It might be complete BS from your position. What does it feel like?
No.
If you believe that thought, that something wants you to heal, something's comforting you.
Well, that's part of my journey, right? Part of my wanting to be a Martha Beck coach.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I needed quite so much healing myself.
Oh, honey, we all do. And the nice thing about this coach training is that it's designed to help you heal your own wounds, because until you, it's like we are fractals of a certain pattern, and fractals are mathematical patterns that recreate themselves over and over, the way a cloud will create the same billowing shape over and over and over. And if you don't, as you heal yourself, you begin to fractalize around you, and people start healing around you, whether or not you're doing any coaching. It's so interesting. And that's actually what attracts them as clients. Not, and I don't mean that. It sounds so predatory. But it's people can sense that healing is there for them in someone who has healed his or her own wounds, and that's what draws them. It really does. I once had a client who, I was at an art exhibit, and there were all these partitions set up in this space, and I was at the very back looking at a painting, and this woman came around the partition and said, "There you are. What are you?" I said, "Well, what do you mean?" I'm trying to be a good girl. And she said, "I don't know who or what you are, but I've been following the energy around the exhibit, and it's coming from you." And I was like, "Oh, that is super weird." But only I didn't, because by then I was used to it, frankly. And people ask me what my marketing strategy is, and the truth is it is concealment and evasion. All I do is, like, hang out by myself and do my own work, and people find me. So when you get really clear like that, believe me, not only can you help people who've lost loved ones, but by healing yourself, you will automatically begin drawing the right people to you. So this, I'm talking half to Chris now, too, because I know she can put herself in a bit of a knicker twist over the financial thing we were just talking about. So you can't know that this is true until you experience it, dear. But as you heal, you will become super magnetic to people who've lost loved ones, especially through suicide. And that is a gift the world deeply needs.
Thank you, Martha.
Thank you, my dear. Big hug over the phone. Okay, so we still have half an hour, right, Chris?
We do.
Next question.
I've got two different people who I think might want coaching, and I'm just mentioning that so you can kind of tell me if you want to.
All right.
More
do we have any other
questions
on the printed, on the handed in ones that I can answer?
Yeah, these are, we actually handed in ones.
All right, let's do that, and then.
Okay.
So
here's what I think will be a quick question, and that's Jerry posed this question. She says, "How will I know when I'm the window and not the light?"
The way you know that you're the window and not the light is that you start doing and saying things that you have no idea where they came from. You just will blurt things to people thinking, why did I use that example? Like, you say something like, you know, it's like when they toss the ball in a lacrosse match, and you're thinking, I've never even seen a lacrosse match. Why did I bring up lacrosse? And they'll burst into tears and say, this all happened on the lacrosse team and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, whoa, something that knows them better than I do is doing the coaching here. Chris, have you had that experience?
Oh, only in every coaching session.
Sorry,
I find myself I have no idea why I'm saying this, but I've learned to just say it.
Yep.
Because I have to acknowledge to myself, this is not insane. Go with this. You are
yep.
being guided.
It just pops out, and then it's like, whoo-hoo, this is fun, scary fun, because I'm saying things that are just completely out there, but they're all landing. It's super fun. That's how you know.
That's definitely
okay,
how you
know.
Okay,
next question.
All right, so here's one. I don't know if it's Bridget or Brigitte Shipman. She says, my goal is to make a career shift with moving from a successful career coaching position in public education to life design or life coaching. The shift feels beyond right. I'm not quite sure how to pursue this journey in a rural setting. I'm the main provider for my family. Can you give me your best advice on how to pursue this calling?
Ah, I happen to live in a very, very rural setting and be the, at this point, the sole provider for my family and a number of other people. So I know exactly where you are in terms of your life situation. And all I can say is, all hail technology. You can do anything with coaching now that the technology exists to do virtual connections. I mean, when I started, all I knew was all I needed. I started seeing people in person, and then that just became, you know, too much of a hassle. And there were people who were flying into Phoenix to work with me, and I wanted to keep working with them later, and they were no longer in Phoenix. So I started working with the phone, and then when I created my business, it's completely virtual. We have meetings once a week where everybody is just on a computer screen, and it's remarkably similar to being in the room with them, amazingly similar, and I'm not a tech person. So anything that is information-based is going to do well in today's economic climate. And anything that offers people guidance that is genuine and real and useful is going to do well. So the only thing that can stop you is your own fear. And if you don't have any fear, those creative responses will start popping up around you, I promise. It's only fear. And most of us have career and money fears. As you get rid of them, ideas for how to do this over the phone from, you know, I'm doing it from literally the edge of a national forest, and it's working pretty well. So you know, you'll get lots of classes on this, right, Chris, on how to be a,
totally.
You'll have a business section, a of your coaching.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll definitely be talking about that. There's setting up shop classes. There's coaching your first client classes. There's how to get your message out into the world classes. So all of that will help for sure.
All righty.
So, all right. So we have two people left who've written in things that I think are quite coachable. So I'm going to ask Aida. I'm going to read Aida's post, and then I will unmute her. Actually, sorry, I'm going to unmute her first just so that's taken care of. Okay, she's unmuted, so I'm just going to read this quickly. She says, I realize I'm not alone in suffering, but the last 7 years of my life have been one heart-wrenching experience after another, sprinkled by some pretty incredible miracles. After surviving a childhood where I experienced sexual abuse, war-torn countries, and abandonment, I'm grateful I didn't end up being a crack whore on the street corner, but instead ended up being drawn deeply into an evangelical cult where I ended up meeting my husband. Within 6 months of being married, I knew something was wrong, and on our one-year anniversary after a horseback riding accident in which I bruised my six vertebrae, I also found out I was pregnant. After a pretty traumatic birth experience, I was left with this miracle baby, chronic pain, fibromyalgia, severe depression, where I was only saved from suicide because I couldn't abandon my own child. Then as I was coming out of the water and my husband told me that he was attracted to men but didn't want anything to change in our relationship and raise our child together, I was shattered in ways I never knew possible and have tried through therapy and friends to heal from this new revelation, but all I've been successful at is gaining 150 pounds. I've read about how to let go of the past and move on, but I really don't know how when I feel like I'm living in a constant state of anxiety and fear about what will happen if my husband and soul provider changes his mind. I feel this constant burden even though I've told him I want him to live out his life in truth, if being gay is his truth, but he keeps holding on to me in a suffocating way and telling me marriage is what he wants. I try not to be sucked into his confusion, but it's hard to know how because of the force of his personality. This training is another one of the miracles that's come into my life through a friend who went through the training and has always insisted that I'm a shaman person and wanted it to share with me to heal. I want to get the most out of it and not waste this opportunity, but I don't know how if I have this distraction always in my thoughts and my be here now reality. Please do let me know if you think this is possible. I really want it to be. I welcome any and all thoughts and suggestions. Thank you.
Okay.
That's Aida.
I'm so sorry this happened to you, Aida. And it's I'm at the same time I'm smiling because as you read through, I'm like, okay, sexual abuse as a child. Check, did it, been there, done that. War-torn country? No, never been there, done that. Fibromyalgia? Check, been there, done that. Unexpected pregnancy? Check, been there, done that. Husband says he's gay. Check, been there, done that. I mean, it's like all the way, it's like, hello, we have a very similar life. we have very similar lives. So, yeah, you can definitely, I am living proof that you can absolutely, I mean, I developed these tools, these coaching tools, so that I would learn how to be happy despite these things that came into my life situation. And it worked like gangbusters. And now I'm happy for all of them. I'm grateful for all of them. Didn't happen overnight. But, you know, even the fibromyalgia, which isn't supposed to get better, got better. Everything got better. Everything got well. Everything got good, and then everything got really good. So, my dear, I know for certain that somebody, again, never been in a war-torn country as a citizen, but I'm pretty darn sure that also will give way to the coaching tools. So it really is, you really, really nailed it when you said, I can't be happy with these thoughts. Because literally, it is your thoughts and your belief in your thoughts that causes the suffering. Without, as you question your thoughts and change your belief system, each of those things that you just named will turn out to be a gift in disguise. I know that sounds so cliche and tacky, but it did for me. And I have great faith in you that you're in the right place.
Thank you.
So I just did thought work with someone. What I'd like, Bridget or Brigitte or whatever, however you pronounce it, you are going to address each of these issues one by one in your training, and you're going to coach yourself, and your fellow cadets are going to coach you, and your master coaches are going to coach you. And what will happen is the painful thoughts around your situation will begin to dissolve. And as that healing occurs, well, that's exactly what happened to me. And look what's happening to me now. So I'm not going to coach you right now. It's very similar to the coaching I've already done. So I want you to just notice that without your painful thoughts, your life's okay. Like, you know, I actually did Byron Katie work on the idea of physical suffering, and I was remembering having surgery without anesthesia, which is the most painful thing I've ever experienced. And I was trying to, you know, Katie says, suffering doesn't exist except in the mind. And I was like, F you, it does too. And this guy was doing the thought work with me and saying, you know, without your thoughts having this surgery, who would you be? And I'm like, I would be screaming in agony. They're holding me down. There's a rag in my mouth for me to bite, and they're cutting me open, and it hurts. Like, you have no idea how it hurts. And then I realized, you know, I just sat with that, had a total flashback, like a panicked horse, totally freaked out. The poor man was like, oh, no. And I was like, I'm fine, this is just the way it happens. So at the end of my freak out and my flashback, I realized that the most horrifying, painful thing about that surgery was the sound of the doctor picking up his instruments. I'd hear this clinking sound, and I would know, here it comes again. This is going to be even worse. There were thoughts that were popping up. And all these years later, it's interesting, the physical pain was completely gone. And when I looked at it rationally, I could see, wow, all these people were lovingly caring for me. They knew how much pain I was in. I was being helped, not hurt. And if you look at the way the our last coach looked at her thoughts, there's a lot of pain, and it only lives on in the mind. So I lost my train of thought. So what happened with the operation is, even in surgery with someone cutting my body apart, the greatest suffering I experienced came from my thoughts. Everything that's happened to you will heal very quickly once you're able to let go of the thoughts associated with the pain. Those are always the most painful things. And without them, the suffering becomes little. What?
Can I ask just one question? I think my friend who told me about this training actually wondered whether I could heal while I was still married. And I think that is something that constantly does make me think, because there is such so much confusion, and sometimes a lot of tension, a lot of anger, a lot of betrayal, pain associated with how everything happened. And so I think that's one of my kind of like big question marks, is that how do I focus on healing, or even focus on the training, when consistently, probably like in my home, you know, there's sort of like this dynamic that's not healthy.
Let's find out. So can you go to a situation in your home where there is misery occurring? Recently, and I mean a real situation, not a generalized thing, but a real situation where there was tension and stress and pain and all the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it sometimes will come up, like the last time maybe my husband got a cold or a flu, and I think, you know, when he told me what he was going through initially, I went through all these different stages, you know, compassion for him, then anger at not being told, and then compassion again, and all kinds of things. But I think eventually I felt like I just shut down emotionally towards him. And I think that, you know, it comes up when, you know, he feels like I'm not giving to him, like, everything that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I feel like he wants. And then from me, I just feel so depleted all the time. And I think a lot of our real-life tension comes from that, that place.
Okay, so can you think of a specific incident in the recent past? Like this morning at breakfast, were you silent and tense compared to how you used to be? Yesterday, folding clothes, were you getting angry? Just give me a specific.
I think this weekend, you know, I think I said to my husband when, I can't remember, I'm sorry, but like I think it was something like he had said something and I said that, you know, that feels very demeaning when you say that. And then, you know, he kind of went into, well, you're not very respectful of me. And
okay, so where were you? Were you in the car? Were you in the kitchen? Where were you?
We were just around the dining table.
Okay. So there you sit around the dining room table. What's the most painful thought that comes up for you? Just freeze, like you had a remote control that you can freeze the whole scene like a television.
That I don't want to be here. I didn't choose this.
I didn't choose this. Okay. And is that a painful thought in that moment? Is that a good articulation of what you're feeling? Of the thought in your head, I didn't choose this?
No, I think if I were to go a little bit deeper, I think the more painful thought is, this is what I deserve. I don't, you know, I don't deserve
okay.
any better.
So this is what I deserve. That's the most painful thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going to work it. Is it true? I deserve this. Is it true at that moment? I deserve this. I can see him there. He's asking for more. And you're thinking, I deserve this. Is it true?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what feels true at that moment.
Sure. So now, still in that moment, you can see him, you can see the dining room table, you're right there. Can you absolutely know that it's true that you deserve this?
No, I can't absolutely know that.
So just feel the space where that the no came from. Now notice, again, we've still got it paused. When the thought comes up, I deserve this, how do you react and what happens? What happens inside your body when the thought comes, I deserve this?
I think there's just like a rage
mm-hmm.
that wants to fight that feeling.
So do you stiffen, do you tense, do you go silent?
Yeah, very stoic, silent, just kind of like almost invisible.
Interesting. Anything else? Do any addictions or compulsions come up? What is your relationship with food when you're thinking the thought, I deserve this?
I think food is the only thing that makes me feel alive. And
so how do you interact with food when you're thinking of this?
Like I deserve this piece of cake, or I deserve, like I don't really.
Absolutely.
So I deserve this, whatever it is.
Hot fudge sundae, whatever, yeah. I've suffered enough to deserve this. Okay, So now, right there, we've still got the scene paused. You're in the dining room. Your husband's there. He's doing what he does. And you have a tiny stroke that makes you unable to think, form, or remember the thought, I deserve this. No other thought comes to replace it. It's just gone. Now, go inside in that moment and see who you are without the thought as you look at your husband across the dining room table, without the thought, I deserve this.
I think there's a sense of just loss.
There's a sense of loss?
Mm-hmm.
You have no thought, I deserve this. There he is. So what may come up is another belief that underlies that one, something like, well, without the thought, I deserve this, I start to feel bad that I'm accepting it. Is that what's going on? Let us know what's going on in your head as you think this through. And in your heart. What are you feeling in your body without the thought, I deserve this?
I think I feel trapped. Like this is the only choice that I have.
Mm-hmm. So, is that true? This is the only choice that I have. Is that true?
Or maybe I should say, this is the best choice that I have at the moment.
No, the thought is, this is the only choice I have. Is it true?
No.
Because, believe me, you're being kept captive by the most extreme version of your thoughts. So,
mm-hmm.
Can you think of three reasons it may not be true? That this is your only choice. This is the only choice I have.
I mean, I think I could leave.
Yeah, you could physically get up and walk out the door. You could.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you should, but it's possible.
Right.
Can you think of another reason it might be true, that you do have other choices? Real reason. I have one. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah.
I was in almost an identical situation. And, I realized every day I'm choosing to stay here. And I had three little kids. I had, I had my reasons. And I'm not mad at myself for staying as long as I did, but I was physically disabled, so I thought, oh no, I can't survive in any other way. So I totally get where you're coming from, and I know that in a similar situation, I was not devoid of choice. I had my choices. I chose to stay for a long time. Loved my husband, still love him. But it was my choice to stay. And I had other choices. I just thought they weren't as optimal. Could that also be true for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a little daughter, and I think about her emotional well-being through
mm-hmm.
this.
I will tell you flat out, darling, the reason I didn't immediately get on the phone to coach you is that you are in a, and I was in the same place, so this is in no way a judgment on you, but you are not being held captive by, first of all, by anything other than what you imagine and fear, and secondly, you're being held hostage by many thoughts, not just one. You have a dungeon made of thoughts, and they're very, very tenacious thoughts. They are very, they paint a picture of overall helplessness, which is exactly how I felt. And I know from experience that it takes a bit of doing. You have to hack out all the bricks in that dungeon, and at first it's one by one by one, and it takes a while, and then they start tumbling. Then they just start to fall apart, and boom, 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 it all opens up into freedom. But the reason I didn't initially take you up as an on-the-call coaching is simply a matter of time. I didn't have time to go through more than one or two thoughts with you. With you, it's going to take a while. Can you do it? Honey, you shouldn't be doing anything else. I mean, this is the one training. I was in exactly the same situation. Kids, gay husband, fibromyalgia, the whole nine yards. And the only work I could do was trying to figure out what was going on in my mind and how to get free. And that's what the training asks of you. That's what it gives you. And it also gives you, incidentally, a way to make money. That was not my reason for doing it at all. My reason for developing coaching tools was simply that I was trying to figure out how to be happy myself. It stunned me when people started asking me for advice. But having come from a place that was really messed up, I wasn't, like, intimidated by almost any issue that people would bring me, because I had been pretty deep down in that thought dungeon, and my life had looked pretty hopeless for me for a long time. So, yeah, you can do it. It depends on how much you're willing to let go of your suffering and move into another, you know, let go of your belief system, let your ego die. And that is completely 100% up to you, and you do not have to do it. You do not have to. Do you want to? From whatever it is inside you that knows without speaking, does this feel like something you want?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Wow, that's powerful for you to say absolutely when you're very weakened and you're very hopeless. For you to know something absolutely is enormously powerful. That shows how your true self is coming back into the light. And it will not be defeated. It is going to get you out one way or another. I promise you that. One way or another, it wants freedom for you. And it's never going to give up. Ever. Not even if you die miserably, it will still keep helping you. So tell me where I'm wrong about that. It might not feel true yet.
No, I mean, I think I've always sort of felt that part of me that sort of kept me going through everything else. But I think just the past 5 years, I almost wondered if that was gone, like if I couldn't survive this part.
Yeah.
And, sorry, I don't mean to get emotional, but, yeah, no, this is very helpful just to hear that affirmation that I get.
Yeah, and in my case, I left my religion, my job, my family of origin. I had a child with a disability, and I knew before he was born, and that was really stressful. I mean, I was dealing with a lot of crap, and I know you can get out of that crap storm. I know it. I've done it. And it wasn't my mind that did it. It was the thing that knows without speaking, and you have completely equal access to that. If I could do it, you can do it. I know that for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, my dear. Better days ahead, I promise. All righty. So that was, you know, I wasn't trying to be heartless by not coaching her on the line. I just knew that she's going to take a couple sessions before it really starts to open up for her. And that's just experience. You'll learn it. And believe me, the tools will work on her case, on her, because her circumstances are the ones in which they were developed. So anybody else, Chris? We're kind of running a little short on time, but it was
There's
worth it.
One person left.
Yay!
Okay, and it's Heather. So, Heather, I'm going to unmute you, and I'll just read what Heather wrote. She said, I just realized that I'm melting. I'm in stage one and don't know the tools yet as to how to navigate through it, let alone coach anyone else. And is it even possible to coach someone when you're in death and rebirth? It sure as hell doesn't feel like it. I'm terrified, but if given the opportunity, I'd like to talk with you on the call.
Okay. Where's Heather?
Hi. Hi, Martha.
Heather? How you
doing? I don't know. I've been trying to be very present for everything that you've been saying and everyone else has been saying without thinking, oh God, I hope they don't read my question.
Too bad. Your attention has manifested a reality. So you're melting down, and if we had more time, I would be like, oh, well, what's happening? Where are you going? But here's the thing, you guys. The biggest reason we stay stuck in our culture is that we have inherited a therapy mindset where we believe as a culture that talking about the cause of suffering relieves suffering. And that is true in the case of trauma. It is not true if you've already shared the trauma with three people who really heard you. It is not true if you're intellectually constantly digging around in yourself for more reasons to be miserable. Like, oh, maybe it's because of this. Maybe it's because of that. Maybe it's because I got rejected in sixth grade. No, maybe, oh, there was another time in fourth grade. And you start to rehearse in your mind all the possible reasons you could be miserable. And what that does is it keeps the situations alive. So you're melting down, and I'm curious to know why, but I don't need to know. Do you want to give us a sentence that tells us why?
Sure. I can make it quick. Followed my North Star for years. Last year made a huge move, left sort of everything. So my husband and I are now in a completely different location, and we have no jobs, and we seem crazy from the outside, but I know it was the right way to go. But things, the universe hasn't sort of huddled us up yet. You know, when you leap and then you think, okay, I just have to have the courage to leap, and then it's all going to sort of fall into place. So it hasn't fallen into place, and we're just in this crap. Did we do the right thing? But I know we did. We're just not seeing evidence yet, and that's hard. And it's been a while.
Yep. For me, it was like I took a leap. I left academia. I was like, I know this is right. The universe will care for me. 18 months later, no income. It was seriously frightening. And we'll go through that lesson as many times as we need to. When I finally did feel financially solvent, I ended up buying this ranch, which immediately went into the single worst drought in California history and began to die on the vine. So that even though I had no more money issues, I still had scarcity issues, and that's what's been hitting. It'll come back enough times to fix you. That's how many times, and it will hold off long enough to fix you. That's what it's there for. So what's the scariest thought of about your situation right now?
Well, that it's all my fault, that my husband's my fault, because he can't get a job, that if my kids are unhappy, just that, like, I created this because I had to follow my soul.
Okay, so it's all your fault. All this badness is your fault.
Yeah.
All the fear. Okay. We're just going to, this just is a place for Byron Katie work, because when you are melting down, this thought work is the prescribed, this is the, now.
Okay.
There are many aspects of the coaching that are not about this, you guys. Maybe it's because I just went to her school. Everybody is presenting with a thought issue. But honestly, square one, all you do is let go of your old ego. New creative responses can arise. So is it true that it's all your fault?
Well, I did create the situation. It was my motive. So in some ways, yes.
Okay. Now, with the part of you that does not think, with the part of you that deeply knows things like, oh, beauty is beauty, that kind of deep, I want you to see if you can absolutely know that this is all your fault.
No, it was all created and me, and I know that.
When you look at it, did you even have a choice?
No. It was sink or swim.
And where is that coming from, the part that knows? Where is it located in your body?
It's just below my heart, sort of in that power center.
Mm-hmm. So how do you react when you think the thought, it's all my fault? What happens? How do you behave? How do you feel?
I feel like a kid.
But in a, not in a great way?
No, no. It would be hard to... Oh, I'm going into my head. No, sorry.
Yeah, just feel around.
What's the question
body.
Again? I'm lost. I'm lost.
So the thought is, it's all my fault.
Yeah.
You're in a situation, maybe your husband's complaining about not having a job, and you're thinking, it's all my fault, it's all my fault. What happens inside you when you think the thought, when you believe the thought?
I want to throw up, and that is going to go back to childhood trauma, which I know we don't have time for, and I didn't intend to come up. But I just didn't think that everything in life would have to go back to that, because it happens a lot.
It'll keep happening, my dear, until it's healed. As long as you haven't healed it, the universe will keep showing it to you in different forms with different faces so that you can heal. You can't.
I thought I had.
Sure. It goes in waves. It's like you've got a bunch of shrapnel in your brain, and bits of it are come out in a surgery, but then there's still some fragments in there, so you go in again. It's not infinite, but it usually takes more than most people think that it should, because they keep it alive with their thoughts. So I'm not asking about the childhood situation. We don't have time for that, and it's
no.
A reiteration of the trauma she experienced. Would I talk about it in a full session? Yeah, probably, no doubt. But do I need to? No. Be in the situation with your husband now.
Yep, yeah.
Not your childhood. It's now.
Yeah, okay.
Is it all your fault?
No, it's not.
Can you feel the difference in your body?
Yeah.
And you can hear the energy in her voice, you guys. That's the shift of going from not true to true, from false to real.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I can feel that.
Okay. So you see who you are in that same situation without the thought in your mind, it's all my fault. Who are you?
I'm a completely free woman, just having so much fun with my family.
Yep. Excited, embarking on a new career, not afraid, no guilt.
And who had the thought to do it in the first place? I just keep forgetting.
So what's the opposite of it's all my fault? Can you think of an opposite?
Well, it's not my fault, but I want something better. Like, it's...
What's the opposite of fault?
I don't know.
I would say credit. You know, it's all my credit.
Right.
I take credit for all of this.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
All this excitement, all this adventure, all this new horizons, all this don't have to be in a job you hate.
Yeah.
You get the credit for all of that.
That's awesome.
How does that feel inside your body?
It feels like freedom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that feeling, if you can stay in that feeling, you'll very quickly see the situation change. You may not see the situation change immediately because you're trying to heal a wound from childhood that isn't completely healed. So it will keep presenting, because that is the grace of the universe, until you've completely healed it, and then it will go away forever. And you will
okay.
be an amazing coach for people who are taking a risk.
Okay.
You get credit for all this.
Thank you.
You're welcome, dear. So, guys, we just did the Byron Katie work over and over. That's the square one work. There's a whole bunch more. there are, but a lot of people are stuck. Well, everybody who's stuck is stuck because of thoughts. So this is the meat and potatoes of what we do. And you can see I was different from therapy. I wasn't digging around inside or whatever. I was just accessing the part of people that knows the truth already. That's all I did. It was easy peasy, lemon squeezy. So we are more than out of time, and I'm so happy you guys are all here. This was supposed to be like a motivating, inspirational speech, and instead it turned into a full-on group coaching session. But you know what? We follow it. We follow the energy wherever it goes. And a lot of people wanted to be coached. So let me just finish by saying what I just did, you can do absolutely as easily as I did it. It is not complex. It is unusual, but it is not complex. You can do it. Be assured. Did you tell, have they already watched the mother otter teaching her baby otter to climb the, or to swim?
Yeah, I asked them to watch it in preparation for today.
Yeah. You also might want to Google raccoon mother teaches baby how to climb a tree. It's so cute. Because you were born to do this or you wouldn't be here. The skills are just, we just have to, like, put a coat of polish on what you're already doing and you'll be off to the races. And, Chris, make sure you sort out that thought work. I want to hear about a sharp increase in your income.
Oh, I will let you know for sure. And just one other thing I wanted to share with everybody. You know, a lot of the questions over the course of the first couple of calls with Martha and posting on discussion threads end up being about, oh, my gosh, I'm melting, I'm falling apart, I'm too damaged to be a coach, this won't ever work. It's been my experience having been an instructor now since 2008 that over the course of this course, over the course of this time that we're going to spend together these months, shit's going to come up. Pardon my French, but that's just the truth of it. And I think that it's kind of, you know, this training is meant to do that. It's not like we're trying to be manipulative or mean and say, oh, how can we torture them now? But as you learn this stuff, what we all become is our first and best clients. So,
one of the things we
talk about is living it to give it, and that's what that means. It's I am my first client, and I am my foremost client. I'm the one that's foremost in my work, because if I continue to notice what's going on in my body, to notice what's going on in my mind and my thinking, to notice where I'm not in alignment with what I know, what that truth that knowing Martha was talking about, if I can keep looking at that and keep going back there and going back there, I strengthen those muscles, and that's how I teach my clients to do it. So I have no doubt that there are going to be points in this training where you're going to feel oh so vulnerable and oh so scared and oh so convinced that it's never going to work. Great. I welcome that. Bring it, because we're going to help you get past that. These tools are all going to help you get through it. And I'll tell you, I taught a class last week called Coach the Coach 4, Class 4, which is the 16th Coach the Coach class. You're going to have your first one next week. And, man, I watched that gang flopping in the water like a bunch of baby otters, and now they are teaching others how to swim. It is just brilliant.
It's amazing.
So you will be there, too. You will be there.
You absolutely can. And, So that's a beautiful send-off. Have a wonderful month until I chat with you all again. You'll be learning the basic tools, but you guys are getting a jump on it. So, I expect that you will already have begun the meltdown process when next we meet, and we can just coach you through it, and all will be well.
Thanks,
so welcome,
everybody.
Welcome, welcome, and thanks so much for taking this leap. We're doing everything we can to make sure you have a soft landing.
Bye, everybody. Take care.
Bye for now.